Well, thank you, Dr. Gilbert. Congratulations, and thanks for your great introduction. I don't have to waste a lot of time going over blueberry basics. Thanks. So let's get back to anthocyanins and anthocyanidins, okay? As you are probably well aware, consumer awareness and demand for these fruits has just skyrocketed lately, which is a win-win and great for everybody. And it's really due to the fact that there is a lot of in vitro and in vivo evidence out there and a lot of medical literature that ascribes to the fact that these antioxidants aren't just a little buzzword and a fancy, cute marketing gimmick. They probably are really doing something in our diets, and there's a lot more work being done in that field as well. And also because these little devils are a real quick and easy way to get these functional products into your body. And there's many mechanisms by which, as Jessica showed in that first slide of hers, to get them in your body. So it's a real easy crop to use. And I'm USDA, so I talk about the Southeast area. So it's basically around 10 states in the Southeast that may or may not have blueberries. And you can see in the last 10 years of summarized data, there's about a 3.4% fold increase in production. And that's nicely paralleled by about a fourfold increase in the national market for blueberries over the same time period. So blueberries, though, let's go back to the topic on hand, have a very complex anthocyanin profile, probably one of the most of all the berries that we consume on a regular basis. But the problem is, with all this medical literature, the fate of a lot of these lower molecular weight compounds, which are related to the antioxidant capacity and the anthocyanins, is not very well understood or known with regards to bioavailability, but that could be a whole other medical conference, which already exists. And according to Luke Howard and some other folks out there, there are really needs in the R&D and in the processing world to know how we can conserve or preserve these during processing, because they're very unstable. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. So basically, you go to any grocery shelf now, and you get to see this, and lots of berries out there in many of these, whether it's, you know, a palm berry, acai, or a blueberry. So what we've done is we have about a $250,000 pilot plant operation at my facility about 7 miles up the road right near Lake Pontchartrain in New Orleans here. And we do not small, large pilot plant scale operations and make not from concentrate juices. Blueberry has been one of them that we've worked on. And part of the deal is we have to build our databases. And just like she showed, we have to build our whole volatile database, anthocyanin database, and anthocyanidins are well known, but not the anthocyanins in some of these and how they polymerize. And so what we've done is track those changes through juice manufacturing, and you know, you'll see that instability is a problem, and that has also been well pointed out in much of the literature. And there's acronyms in here: NZ is enzyme, clarified, unclarified, SJK, steam jacketed kettle, filtered, pasteurized, you name it, blanched, fresh, hand-pressed, machine-pressed. There's significant losses in processing of the anthocyanin profile in these fruits. So basically in our lab, with the equipment that we had on hand, you could follow either one of these sides, clarified versus purees or smoothies. And what is being illustrated then in the orange highlights is just a quick synopsis of the processes used to get us from a frozen berry to a bottled pasteurized product. So that nutshell, given here, steam jacketed kettle, pectinase enzyme after cooling slightly, hydraulic pressing, save the cake, analyze it as well. Then we ultrafilter or don't ultrafilter. And I know that this filtration system is used in one of the largest commercial juice plants in the nation, so that's what I went with. I had an inside knowledge to that information. So then we pasteurize it on one of the best lab scale, found in a lot of milk, dairy, and juice companies that are real big. Microthermics pasteurization unit, stored in the dark for up to 4 months at 4 degrees. So that's the pasteurization unit and the fill station, the clean fill station and the bottles. I like to use these Corning media bottles because I can autoclave them over and over and use them again and again, and then they're sterilized. So it's a good bottle to use for making lab juice. So if you're not familiar with an anthocyanin, the backbone is an anthocyanidin, and almost always that C3 position or R4 there, where it's circled in the red, is where it is glycosylated and or conjugated with usually three sugars. And it can also happen at the 5 prime, the 7 prime, or the 5 or 7, or the 3 prime, 5 prime, but those are a little more rare, the diglucosides and the further conjugations that are not a lot of them are actually reported in the literature for blueberries, but across the spectrum of the 6,000 or so anthocyanins, they do exist. So glycosylation in the plant puts the sugar on, so one of the easiest and most easy, readily available ways to quantify the data is to actually rip that off and get back to the backbone. Then you can know what a real concentration of each of the 5 main classes of the anthocyanins are in your berry products. And so the method, real quick, has already been out there. I recently put out a pomegranate paper illustrating that method, and then the method itself has been submitted to Journal of Food Compound Analysis. So what we do is we use ChromaDex standards, and you can see the UPLC is able to get a full runoff, including the derivatization garbage, and have a turnaround time of less than 3 minutes between samples. So it's a very robust and fast method also. So look for that one coming out later. So basically, raw fruit for me is frozen absolute control. It's a very easy mechanism by which to use the fruit is to use it frozen, because they already save frozen fruit in bulk at minus 20 freezing facilities. So that's where we got our fruit. And you can see that the raw fruit, if you express these in the units that are usually out there in the literature, it would be 207. Megs per 100 mils, but it's just semantics. The press cake is about 5-fold, but that's on a sample derivatization process where you are actually sampling. This is not a mass balance. If the mass balance is, the numbers are a little different. And what I mean by that, I won't show that here, but 13% of this product was press cake. 87% was juice and loss through processing, press bags, container loss, etc., as you spill on the floor or whatever. So those numbers are more like a 1.4 to 1.8 ratio. So when people say that the majority of it is in the press cake, well, yeah, but the press cake didn't give you the majority of your full weight of your product. That was the juice. So the juice, in a sense, does actually still have a hell of a lot of the mass balance of your anthocyanins in it. But unfortunately, as most of the literature states, we still see these losses from the crude mash at 95 degrees, or the non-clarified juice, or raw juice, or the clarified ultra-filtered juice, and then we are going to see these losses again reflected in the total anthocyanins through both the non-clarified pasteurized up to about 75% loss in both the UF clarified. And this number goes away, I think, but 52 or so percent of it actually is just lost in the storage, and about 46, depending upon if it's clarified or unclarified. So indeed, the losses are still there, but I want to emphasize one thing I think I forgot to say, is that this is a not-from-concentrate juice. Many of the juices out there are actually made from a concentrate, and that product is usually going to have a hell of a lot more loss up front to give you your concentrate. There's not going to be much left in a concentrate, hands down. So, again, you can see a linear loss, almost a perfect linear loss from the crude juice through the storage all the way, and almost every step, pasteurization, and each month thereafter in cold storage, even you see a loss. Now, I want to emphasize that word loss. It's not truly a loss, because there is almost no color variation in these, and I'm not showing that data. It's already published, but my data reflects the literature. It's equal. It's a polymerization of these anthocyanins, and Luke's group in Arkansas has already illustrated dimers, tetramers, octamers, whatever. Unfortunately, a graduate student went off and got a job, and she won't get back with me and tell me what her data said. I'm still waiting on her mass spec analysis of the final data to tell me, okay, well, finish your goddamn work. But anyway, so you can see if we look at total, it's the same pretty much. I'm not going to put all the statistics in there because there's too many letters, but almost across the board, statistical loss, that's not clarified, pasteurized, 0, 1, 2, 4 months storage from the crude. So in conclusion, for the anthocyanidins, malvidin and cyanidin in this blueberry, Tiff Blue, which is a rabbit eye blueberry, were the most abundant. On a weight basis, the Prince Cake has a five-fold increase or more, but if you do a mass balance, it's not really that number. Processing and storage, linear decreases, and the decrease is generally a polymerization event, and that's unfortunate, but that's reality. So then we also looked at these. I have more data than I know what to do with. This could be two talks, so you need to keep me in line here. I won't go over the details, but basically lyophilized powder, trifluoral acetic acid, get yourself spun down supernatant, throw it onto the chip, and run it through the LC-MS-MS. In a nutshell, what happens is once it comes off the chip, you get the electro spray, throws it through the MS quad, first one, sugar still attached. Second MS is going to blow it apart even more when you ionize it and give your son progeny ions, not daughter, right? That's sexist. It's the son ions. And then you can actually see the cleaved sugar components and all the real smaller parts come out. This is what the LC-MS trace is going to look like, and you can see some peaks are clearly resolved, whereas others, like that big fat one at the end there, that's actually three anthocyanins together. What the MS can give you the better resolution if you have the LC up front done right, and that's very hard with the galactose and the glucose moieties because all it is one OH hydroxy shift in that molecule. So that's why we're reporting them as a piranoside together. But you can see in this data set, basically every one of these semi-quantitatively is a linear decrease again and statistically significant through storage, not in clarified juice, not clarified pasteurized versus clarified ultrafiltered or clarified juice that's been pasteurized. That's what it looks like graphically. 63% loss for the big boys, around 80% loss for some of the lower concentration ones. And interestingly, the bottom three, which are the cumarial conjugates, increased. That's me? I have 3 minutes. Okay. And here they are, just to look at them. They're fun. This is the cyanidin, the delphinidin, and the putidin cumarals that nobody's ever seen or reported yet in blueberries, but we're finding we have more acetyl ones I'm not showing here, and a few diglucoside ones that are still not reported in the literature that we've actually been able to isolate. And as you can see, those are actually increasing through processing, which kind of makes sense. That lends to that polymerization idea. But overall, if you look at the total, it's a big decrease. And so those three cumarals, like I said, not reported. The loss is more or less a polymerization, and that lends to, oh my God, what's going on with bioavailability? The bigger these buggers are, the less my lower biome and gut's going to get them. So that is work that still needs a lot to be addressed. I'd like to just say, qualifying though, this not from concentrate juice that we've produced, both pomegranates, Satsuma blueberries up the road in our lab. Hands down, better than anything bottled out there in the market. But that's another story. So, any questions?
Quick one. Particularly the profile, particularly in terms of the low antigens, is that typical of high bush and low bush as well, do you know?
They vary. Malvidin and cyanidin seem to be, even in the high bush, predominant. Yeah, but the peonidins and the petunidins, they are all over the place.
Okay, it seems like the peonidins was the one that was low, particularly.
It's the lowest in Tiff Blue here, and in rabbit eyes, it's a little lower. But I don't know if that's across the board.
Okay.
Would you see differences in the profile from these 10 states in this area versus whether you put those same varieties in a different part of the country, like Baltimore?
Well, it's interesting because the question you just raised, a really big study came out of Rutgers and New Jersey. Well, you're growing rabbit eyes or southern high bush in a climate they're not typically grown in. So that's a very good question, and it's published literature. So some people might look at that result, yet you've got something that got a hell of a different chilling requirement and had a completely different summer environment and a soil type that it's not used to as well. So whether or not it's real, it's a good question.
If you consider the other vacciniums, like cranberries, lingonberries, bilberries, versus blueberries, are those anthocyanins pretty similar, or are they different?
You'd have to ask somebody else. I don't know the answer to that. There's, you know, I have my limits.
Thank you.